You are now tuned in to the VF One Show with me, your host, VF Castro. I'm a veteran American sports journalist and political strategist, so each week I'll be discussing Formula One just a little bit differently. Thank you for spending time with me today, and I hope you enjoy the show. Thank you, everyone, for joining the VF One Show with me, your host, VF Castro. I have a very special guest today. His name is Vincenzo Landino, and I'm going to let him introduce himself. So, Vincenzo, thanks for joining us. Ever since I started following you on Twitter, you are like probably one of the more fascinating follows. So I want you to intro yourself and just tell us what you do and why you got into F1.
Oh, wow. That's very kind of you. Why did I get into F1? Or I guess let me introduce myself. I am actually a longtime Formula One fan since I was like 5 years old. So it's been 32 years at this point. But I run my own creative studio. So a lot of video production, a lot of audio, or very large tech software companies. Boring, to say the least. And so over the past few years, I just do things that were a little bit more exciting for myself. Obviously, having the business running, it felt like a job. And I was like, what can I do that does not feel like a job anymore? Oh, let me start talking about Formula One. Already enough people talking about every other sport out there. And I mean, I love other sports as well, but something about Formula One hit so many different cross sections with me between the tech side, the business, the political aspect of it. So much that goes into Formula One that just worked for me as a person, my personality, the things I have, whether it be, you know, travel or luxury products, you know, technology and software, all the things that now are so integral to Formula One, modern Formula One. I said, you know what, I'm going to go all in. And now I've got myself a newsletter about the business side of Formula One, most media aspect of it, as well as, you know, the marketing of it, the growth here in the United States. So I talk a little bit about a lot of things. Not so much the on-track stuff. I try not to focus there. There's so many other sources you can get on-track conversation. It seems like that's the first thing a lot of people go and want to talk about is what happens on track. And I didn't want to focus on that. But yeah, so that's what I'm doing. I mean, I've got my Twitter account where I probably do way too much tweeting, but it is seemingly more and more only about Formula One. And it's great, but the more the sport grows and the more people get, you know, interested in what, the easier it is to just kind of keep the content flowing. And, you know, the more there's different partnerships stuff, for lack of a better word, there is to kind of find cross section of.
No, totally. And I think that's one of the things that it drew me to your Twitter account was you were talking about the marketing data aspect of what was actually driving the growth of Formula One in the last couple of years. And I just, again, like, I think going back to what you said about content creation, you know, and the term, you know, content, I feel like it's become one of those terms that people just don't really, you kind of cringe when you hear it now, because everything is content, you know, and everyone is trying to make content because they're trying to find their own niche. And I think that's such a fascinating thing about TikTok right now is that you literally have every single type of personality out there right now creating content for Formula One. I mean, there are people on that are talking about, you know, drivers and their hair and what partnerships or sponsorships they should be in for hair companies. And I'm like, this is so weird that this is getting like 13,000 likes on TikTok. This is crazy.
Yeah.
So I think back to your point though about that, I think that those intersections that are occurring right now, I have a background in politics. And so for me, I just find I'm gravitating. I think that my situation with football, I covered football for over 10 years and I was so bored. I cannot tell you how bored I got to the point where I couldn't mm-hmm. do it anymore. I was a government major. I wanted to pursue government, and that's what I ended up doing for a little bit. But looking back at the growth of Formula One, you mentioned politics of F1, everything. It was such a natural thing for me to kind of get into the political side of F1. And now I kind of naturally am able to talk about that because of my background. So it's really interesting how, you know, F1 has seen such a massive, substantial growth, and yet there's a place for everyone in this sport. It's really unique in that regard.
Yeah. It's, you know, you bring up like the different aspects of what people talk about nowadays. I don't want to kick off too early with talking about Drive to Survive, but it's kind of what, you know, Drive to Survive for the sport as a whole, but also just the types of fandom that are allowed. And it's a shame seeing people that have watched the sport for dash or gatekeep a lot of how folks are, but it's refreshing to see that you can have somebody who enjoying the world of Formula One, because to me, it's very much a world, right? It's this whole like ecosystem. It's not just the stuff that happens on track. And while that's really important, it's a lot of the stuff off the track that, you know, makes a difference on these circuits, on the track, the racing itself, right? There's decisions that are made off the track that are just as important or maybe not important. And so I think that's what Drive to Survive has done. Unfortunately, there's a subset of folks that don't like that for whatever reason. And they kind of give Drive to Survive a bad rap. They give the new fans a bad rap. You know, that it's like, oh, these are Americans that are doing this to the sport. And it's like, no, Americans have been watching this sport long enough. It's not like they're all new. Yes, there's a lot of new people, but that's okay. And just because they enjoy a sport differently than you enjoy it, like, there's nothing wrong with that, right? There's just so much happening right now, good, bad, or indifferent, that is all net. The sport, Formula One, the business, Liberty Media, the stakeholder, and it's okay, you know? Like, I message out there for a lot of folks is like, it's okay.
Yeah. I think a lot of UK people have this perspective on American reality TV. They automatically go to Kardashian. And they look at the narratives from Drive to Survive in that it's very Kardashian level, that you have this manufacture. A lot of it is manufactured chaos. A lot of it is done for, you know, the dramatics of TV. And so people kind of have this opinion. And I think we've seen this with Red Bull versus Mercedes. You know that there's tension between the two because they're at the top. They want to be at the top, and they've been fighting each other for a long time now. And so you're going to have that natural, you know, competitiveness. But at the same time, so much of that was manufactured by a show. And I think that's what fans have seen. And you saw what happened yesterday at on Sunday at the Mexico Grand Prix, where Lewis was being interviewed and the fans started booing him and Checo had to kind of shush them.
But can I say something about that real quick? Like, not to cut you off, and I'm sorry. You know what? Go ahead and finish, and then I'll say something.
I was just going to say, I think that, you know, that is a very classy of Checo to do that. But again, I think that's where the UK fan base sees Americans, sees the sort of, you know, like I said, this Kardashian level of drama.
Go ahead. Yeah, but you know what? Like, I'm a European soccer fan. You know, football, real football. And I mean, the hooligans in England, it's just as bad, right? It's no different. And in every sport we have fans that boo. Like, so while I don't like, okay, wow, they're booing Lewis, whatever. I mean, it's part of sports, right?
Like, yeah.
Crap talking, shit talking. I don't know if I can swear on your show, but shit talking.
Yes, you can. You can swear.
Shit talking is part of sports, right? Now there's a line that gets crossed and that's not okay. But overall, like, right, let's just keep this very, shit talking's okay. And booing people is, I mean, it is what it is. It happens all the time, right? If you're into the Philadelphia Eagles fans are notorious for treating other teams coming into their stadium, right? they've thrown stuff that's crossing the line, but the booing and just like yelling things out. I mean, big deal, right? It's part of sports. Like this is part, I don't necessarily see that as a problem per se. I just want to, I'm kind of throwing a contrarian idea out there because everyone's very quick to be like, oh no, they're booing Lewis or oh no, they're booing so-and-so. Like, yeah. And like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's sports. So while I think there's a line, I want to say like, that's okay. Like if fans should be passionate about certain things, about who they like to watch, part of what these sports are about. So I do want to throw that out there just to make it clear that I do stand on both sides of it. It's the disrespect that I think we should be more mad about, right? Not the actual booing or the, you know, certain.
No, completely. I think exactly. You nailed it. There's, we all watch sports. We all know sports. We all know what happens at sporting events. We're not stupid. And we know the difference between, you know, just your casual booing, things like that. And then a situation that could turn completely, you know, deadly. You know, we've seen it happen in some countries with some sporting events and people can get crazy. And so I think that that's kind of that trying to quell that a little bit on both sides, trying to cool people down. Because like I said, I think a lot of these new fans coming in, they don't really understand the history, you know? And so they kind of follow these storylines and it's all very entertaining, but I think there is that huge difference. And you know, to your point, it is sport, but at the same time, things can get scary.
Yeah. But so let me ask you something, right? In most other situations in life, right? Cause sport is kind of does take on a whole different world, right? But in most situations in life, what would happen if somebody new to something and walks in and wants to start enjoying it, right? Like let's talk about the watch world. New comes into the watch world and is like, hey, I've never really been into watches before. I'm now going to got it. I want to start collecting or buying or whatever it is. Well, what is the natural instinct most people are going to have? They're going to say, oh, well, let me teach you, right? Well, that's kind of the same thing with F1. Is we have an opportunity, we meaning fans that have been around longer than Drive to Survive or just even, it doesn't even have to be 30 years, 50 years, just even fans that have been fans for 10 years, you know, 5 years. We should be helping these people and teaching them that the first instinct shouldn't be gatekeep or chastise them or how they want to enjoy the sport. It should be, that's great. Have you checked out X, Y, and guiding them to resources that are going to the history of the sport, more about, you know, certain things, articles where they can go and read up on it. I mean, it doesn't take anything to be kind in return, right? So if it's easy and it's maybe sometimes the knee jerk reaction to certain people because of what they might say, but it's also doesn't cost us anything. And I say us as a whole to just be nice, be kind, and direct people into, you know, resources where they can learn, because most people don't. You're right. Most of these new know, and that's okay. But I do think it, you know, the onus is on fans who've been around for a while to just be kind, educate, because without the education, how can you expect anything else from a fan? Like, you know, a new fan, if all they have to go on is a show on Netflix that is literally created for drama.
Well, I think this goes to, I think it was a week or 2 weeks ago now where Lizzie McIntosh was on, something Pit Stop Boy. I don't know if I'm getting that right. I vaguely remember what the name of the podcast was. Something Boys. And they didn't know, that Seb had won, or they didn't know how many championships Sebastian Vettel had won. I'm not sure.
They didn't know, like, he won with Red Bull, I think it was, which was kind of okay. Weird. But yes, that's
kind of weird. Okay. But even then, there were so many comments from that said that if they were women and didn't know, they would have been destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's happened. I'm not without going into spoke. Very specifically, there are friends of mine that are content creators in F1 that get absolutely crucified saying something about, you know, driver, oh, the hair, how good looking they are. Meanwhile, yeah. if, you know, there was someone who said it to Chris's face in a press conference, was like, oh, you know, you're so good looking or something like that. And we all laughed at it. She talks about how good looking they are. And it's like, you know, nothing DTS girl. And she's not, she's been watching the sport since the Senna movie came out, which was, I think, 2011. So she's pre DTS. And it's like, everyone's quick to just, and I say everyone, people in comments.
Some people.
Dash her. And I'm like, that's like, come on, where's the double standard there? But yeah, you know, the pit stop guys, the issue there, and this, and I will, I'll circle this all back, right? I think that the biggest issue with those, supposedly, their podcast is not geared for fans who've been around for a long time. I guess have never really listened to their show other than that clip. They are, they're trying to like learn F1 basically on the show. I think the biggest thing with
That's
them
dope.
That, yeah, exactly. But I think the biggest issue most people had with them was the fact that like they're getting to F1 and drivers, which that's a problem with the system, right? That's a problem with F1 and the media, the F1 media, because like, why are these two guys getting access when they're coming across as completely ignorant to reality, right? Whereas like if a woman was doing that, and this was like the bigger conversation, like if a woman was doing that or didn't know anything about it, is she going to get the same access as these guys? And I know for a fact it's not happening, right? I know for a fact friends that are women that are not getting opportunities in F1 when they're creating great content, engaging content, they're building up communities. And so there is like this whole weird thing, right? Where who's getting opportunities, who's not getting opportunities, why are they getting opportunities? And I know we're kind of going in like on a tangent on this one, but yeah, like it's been interesting to watch, sit back and like see all this stuff unfold, because there's such a bigger light being shown, shine on Formula One content and content creators. Whereas, you know, 3-4 years ago, no one gave a crap. Now all of a sudden it's like everyone wants in. Certain people are going to get opportunities. Other people are not. And then now it's under a microscope. Well, why are you getting opportunity? How come I'm not? Why is this one getting opportunity and that one's not? And it's like, okay, well, you start putting the pieces together, connect the dots, whatever you want to say, whatever thing you want to say. And it is strange. Yes.
Well, it was like that when I was in football. And it's like, you would see these girls getting the call-ups, and you would see them getting, you know, the hot shit jobs. And, you know, some of me and my girlfriends would sit back and be like, what the hell? Like, why isn't anything happening for me? This is stupid. And, you know, I think that it is super frustrating being a woman in any industry, really. You're just kind of waiting for your time. And I think the more aggressive a woman gets in really any industry, and we're not going to go into sexism, but I think that the more aggressive a woman gets, the less opportunities that woman gets because she's too aggressive, you know? Or she gets all the opportunities, but nobody likes them and nobody really wants to work with you. So, you know, whereas again, you know, guys do it and it's whatever, it's free for all. But I think that, you know, there are a lot of women who are trying to make it in Formula One right now, and they're all hitting these massive roadblocks at the same time. So all of them are looking towards content creation to try and get to the next level. But at the same time, I think that, as we talked about earlier, because F1, it checks so many boxes, it kind of, it flows into so many different veins in you know, politics, healthcare, engineering, like every single thing, even criminal justice. I mean, look at all the incidents that have happened throughout the world, where Formula One drivers' personnel have been robbed, have been attacked at gunpoint. I mean, these are all national security issues, really, that, you know, it just encompasses so many different sectors. And I think that this is the only sport in the entire world where there's a place for each distinct specialty. So I think that it's only going to inspire more competition, because you know that these roles at the end of the day are still going to be incredibly limited. So it's going to become more cutthroat. And I think that is that Netflix effect, because when COVID happened, we were all locked down at the same exact time. We were all stuck with the same streaming platforms worldwide. Mm-hmm. And we had the same shows and everybody was on social media. What are you watching? I finished Netflix today. What do I watch next? You know? And it was this big joke, like, hey guys, I just got a Hulu account because I finished Netflix, you know? And that was a big joke. And so we all had nothing but time at that time. And depending on where you were in the world, that time varied, but people were just throwing themselves into hobbies. People were learning how to make bread. They were doing TikTok mm-hmm. dances. Then you had this massive drive to survive, a fan base that was just grew overnight. Absolutely. And so what happened with that was this massive explosion in growth at F1. I don't even think they saw it coming. So there's a lot of growing in the sport right now, from the media perspective to content creation. There's so many growing pains happening right now. And I think that we all have to realize that. And, you know, it doesn't matter pre or post drive to survive. It's kind of like we're all in the same environment together right now. And we've all got to get through it, because if we don't, I mean, I see potential for things to become more hostile. Because again, like what do people do? They go on social media, they leave comments, like they just, you know, and that those comments affect different people differently.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not a one size fits all, right? It's not like, hey, you and first of all, anybody that tells you how you should respond and react to certain comments is wrong, right? Like I can't tell you how you should react to something, because I might react one way, but it's okay for you to react a different way. And you have a different experience than I will, and vice versa. Right. Like, and other folks will have different experiences on how they, you know, on the potential harassment they get, or, you know, not harassment. Like I have a great experience with people online. Yeah. That's awesome. But most people don't, right. Like, So, for sure. I mean, anybody that tells you how you should feel or how you should react to these things is just delusional, to be honest with you.
Totally. And I think this kind of segues into the next topic. You were on a podcast, what was it, last week? I think I saw it a few days ago, where you had some comments about Circuit of the Americas and the fan base, the people you were talking to. And you were pleasantly surprised by what these people had to say. You could tell, like, maybe they were new fans, but they knew their shit. They knew what they were talking about, which you were pleasantly surprised with.
Yeah, and I think because my experience with new fans, right, is online. Unfortunately, but it is what it is.
It's the reality.
A lot of my interactions with folks are online, and I get to kind of see how some people are. And but being getting to be on, you know, I haven't been to a race in a long time, and I've never been to the USGP, and so being able to go to a race post DTS was just, like I said on that show, like, it was pretty eye opening to see that, hey, while you have a lot of newbies, they're not all dumbasses, they're not all clueless as to what they're watching, they're not all about drama. I mean, I couldn't tell you, you know, how many people were sitting there with their F1 TV subscriptions following along or listening to the radio or, you know, talking just the way they were talking about the timings and the strategies. Okay. You know, undercuts and, you know, what tire strategy that they're on. Like that's stuff that, first of all, Drive to Survive doesn't go into, right? Yeah. So you, in order for you to understand all of that, unless you're a motorsport fan in general, right? Those are all fairly, I don't want to say complex, because they're not they are complex, right? Because even the teams get them wrong. They are complex. So for someone that's new to go as far as like learning deeper, you know, an entire strategy, like that's like, okay, you know what? You've taken the time to really go and understand something about this sport. Whether you're new or not, that doesn't discredit your, like, who you are. And, you know, so many people just super gracious and had questions, you know, like we're kind of all sitting there in the grandstand. You have a minute and 30 seconds to talk to someone before the cars fly by again. Right. And so people are talking and we're having interactions, and it's like, they're just asking questions, right? They're not being dicks about it. They're just saying, right, like, hey, what, you know, what's going on there? What's happening there? Why is that car doing this? And it's like, that, you know, why not just, like I said earlier, just have a conversation and explain it. You know, what's the,
right,
we're not, it's not going to hurt. It's not going to hurt anyone to just explain it.
Have a conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, so, one thing that, go on.
Oh, go ahead. No.
I was going to say that the United States Grand Prix broke not only Circuit of the Americas records, but F1 attendance record this season. There were 400,000 people. That is insane to me. I remember going to Circuit of the Americas pre-DTS, and it was just like just a day at the horse races. it was so casual. It was so cool. And I've always said my favorite thing about that track is a general admission, because you can walk around, you can find out where you want to sit, you can get all different vantage points. It's really exciting. And then in the last couple of years, like, that's not really the most effective strategy, because I feel like everyone is taking that strategy, and now it's becoming like, it's harder and harder to see the race from those different vantage points that I think a lot of people kind of got used to. So I don't know where Circuit of the Americas grows from there, but I would hate to see ever that race leave the schedule. I just think that's such a fixture. It is such an amazing track. It takes the best elements from so many iconic tracks, throws it into one. Mm-hmm. It is the most exciting track, I think, next to Silverstone on the calendar. There's something magical about that track, and I love saying that we have it, but I don't know. It's watching this growth of F1 happening in Austin, especially, I think, is one of the coolest things. I don't know how that is in Florida right now. Is it, are you guys kind of seeing similar now that you have a race?
You know, what's really interesting, I saw the viewership numbers, and by the way, I'm not trying to correct you. It was 440,000 in attendance, which is wild, right? Like,
wow.
Yeah. And they were the CEO of COTA, of Circuit of the Americas, is like fully ready to get to 500,000, you know, half a million. He's like, you know, fully expects to see that within the next year or so. Going into, what were we just talking about? What did you just ask me?
I was asking you about, have you seen that kind of growth and that interest in Florida?
Oh, in Florida. You know, Florida's interesting. So I'm an hour outside of Miami, and what I thought was actually quite fascinating was that West Palm Beach, where technically my region, you know, I'm in Palm Beach, so we're in the West Palm Beach area, which includes everything from Jupiter to, I don't know, Boca Raton-ish. There is, it was the second highest rating for the U.S. the race at Austin. So Austin had the most. So the most viewership came from Austin. Second most viewership was from West Palm Beach. Probably because there's a massive, massive Ferrari. The Ferrari Club is like the largest in the world, I believe, here in the United States. But Palm Beach is one of the more prestigious or longest. So like, there's a lot of F1 fans here.
It's perfect for you.
Yeah, it's very perfect. But there is not, I don't know, the palpable feeling, I know even in Miami, like around the race time, the Miami GP, it was, you know, it was exciting, but it's kind of like, okay, now what? And again, I don't know, because I'm not in Austin right now, like, okay, after the race, or, you know, you're there, so you could probably answer this. But there's a lot of conversation. I know, like, even at the gym I was working out, it was kind of funny because I saw someone with a Hamilton hat on and then someone with a Verstappen hat on. They kind of walked towards each other. They were walking towards each other. They kind of gave each other the up and down, and then they just like walked away.
Stop it. That's
it was actually pretty funny, but I'm not trying to create any drama there. It was funny. But I've definitely seen a lot of, like, you know, going to the gym, I've seen a lot of folks with like F1 shirts on, you know, Mercedes shirts on, Red Bull shirts. I was at the market the other morning and I saw a guy in a full on orange, Verstappen. And I was like, geez, I've never really, not that I've never seen it before, but like, that was weird. And then I saw like four or five other people with like Mercedes hats on. Someone had a, you know, Ferrari shirt on. Someone had a, McLaren backpack, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. So you start seeing more of it. I'm not saying I've never seen it, but I've definitely noticed it more now.
Yeah.
So there's definitely excitement, and you know, I've gone out to the bar or out to eat, and I've seen people, like, I actually ran into a guy at the bar who was in a full on Red Bull hat, Red Bull team shirt. And so I kind of struck up a conversation with him. This is probably a few weeks back, and you know, huge fan. He's like, ah, you know, love F1, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You know, like wearing it out to the bar. I don't know. I usually dress differently when I go out to the bar, right?
Yeah.
Or when I go out, but this guy was in his full on like F1 gear. And so I thought that was cool. So yeah, people are definitely more, it seems like they're more interested in showing off the fandom, right? Like maybe they would wear an NFL hat, right? Previously, but now it's cool to throw on like your allegiance, your F1 allegiance, you know, whereas maybe a few years back, it was like, oh, I'm not going to wear a Ferrari hat and look like a douche because people are going to think that I'm like a Ferrari guy. You know, now it's like, oh, yeah. No, I'm the F1. You know, I watch the F1. You know, I'm an F1 team. I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking just about
other people. General, right?
Or whatever. I have a Mercedes hat, but it's, you know, it's okay to do that now because I follow the team. I don't, you know, maybe those are the reasonings I have
to ask
these questions. Maybe these are questions I'll start asking because it is quite fascinating. You know, why all of a sudden are you wearing that hat? Would you have worn that hat 5 years ago? But yeah, so there's definitely excitement. I think F1 has gotten to the point where it's like, it's so palpable that you know, like with NFL, right? You walk around here in the United States, and with the NFL, it's you can, especially if you live in a city where there's a team, it is, I'm a big Steelers fan. And so you go to Pittsburgh, you're pretty much just like, you are a Steelers fan, right? Either you're a Steelers fan or you know what's going on. Even if you don't, if you're not a fan, I've talked to people that aren't football fans, but they're like, oh yeah, Steelers, like everyone in my family, everyone of this, like people wearing jerseys, like as regular attire, it's very palpable, right?
Yeah.
I don't think F1 is there yet.
Well, you know, I think
I don't see it there yet.
I think a big thing, and I noticed this in Austin, and again, having our own track here, it's not uncommon to see F1 gear. It's very common to see F1 gear here. I see it all the time. I've seen more of it in recent years, but
yeah.
I definitely, from I think the time we got our track, I've been seeing F1 merch, and I think that obviously it's blown up even more, so you're going to see it more. But I think one of the big things is, because the second I tell people I'm an F1 fan, I start getting quizzed. I notice like the questions coming in. It's like, well, and obviously I can answer them. I mean, one of my friends who played in the NFL, he's currently in sports media. He texts me all the time with F1 questions. He just texted me yesterday about the tires. And like, he just, this is our conversation. But for most of the time when I do see people, they will ask me questions about, you know, like if I'm wearing anything Mercedes, for example, it's like, oh, so who's your favorite driver? And like, you'll start getting those types of questions. And I'm like, I don't have time for this shit, but okay, fine. Mm-hmm. I will entertain you for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
But it's like, you kind of have to, there's a line between like we were talking about earlier, being educational and being condescending.
Sure.
And I think as fans, if you've been in a fan long enough, you kind of want to roll your eyes when people kind of, it's almost like dogs at a dog park. You know what I mean? Like they see each other and they start sniffing each other out, and then like they start chasing each other around and playing. That's kind of how F1 fans have become. It's like you see someone in gear and you want to ask them questions, but you don't want to sound like a dick.
Yeah.
It's really interesting how all that's happened.
Yeah. I'd say it's pretty different right here in the US where, and I'm going to say, again, I'm saying the US, but it's different because, like if you see someone in an NFL jersey, you probably won't go up to them, right? It's just like, it's normal. It's like, oh yeah, that person's a Dolphins fan. Like, right. I was at the grocery this morning and there was like, I'm in Florida. So there was like five people with like Dolphins stuff on. The Dolphins are good right now. So you've got like, everybody's showing off their allegiance to the Dolphins, but I don't care to go talk to them and be like, oh yeah, the Dolphins, right? Like I don't really care. I think F1, you kind of do get, it almost still feels like it's one of those like, ooh, I'm an F1 fan. Like, this is something not a lot of people know about. Like, I can show off how cultured I am because I'm an F1. Right. And then not a bad thing. I'm just like, that's, I'm not gonna lie. I always felt like that. Right. Like, I always felt kind of like, I like this thing that not a lot of people liked. And it was just, you know, whatever, even the same thing with European soccer. I watch a lot of your Italian Serie A and not many people watch it. Right. It's like, oh, you're English Premier League. No, I watch Italian. Oh, wow. Okay. Like, you know, it's like this thing when you're wearing, what if I wear my Roma gear around or like a Roma shirt or something on? It's like, I don't know. I feel like I'm wearing something that not a lot of people know about. Right. Same thing with F1. And so I think because of Drive to Survive, people get to be like, oh, this is something that I can talk about. Someone asks me, I'm ready to answer questions, or maybe I'm going to strike a conversation.
But in a weird way, I feel like it's a interesting way right now to make friends, because you see someone wearing F1 gear and you automatically know you have something in common with that person. So you kind of just, you want to have a conversation with them. So in a really strange way, it's kind of like, oh, hi, we could potentially be friends. Mm-hmm. If you're not people at the gym wearing a Lewis Hamilton hat and a Max Verstappen hat and mean mugging each other in passing.
Sure.
I'm sure that those two could be great friends if they just like, you know, had a chat.
Right. But 100%.
I do think though that, again, like the perception of Europeans and Americans, one thing that it continues to stick race after race after race, how many European F1 fans say and ask questions like, why are American celebrities so damn rude on the grid wall? And I think we can take this back to last year with Megan Thee Stallion, when her security brushed off Martin Brundle at the US Grand Prix. And then you had a whole bunch of people say, oh, because Martin Brundle got his feelings hurt, F1 changed their policy and now they don't allow security or, you know, entourage onto the gridwalk. And so a lot of people were mad at F1 for responding in Brundle's favor. But then we saw what happened with Brad Pitt this year.
And so, it's like,
I think that my take on that was, if you are invited to have that much access to an F1 event and you're making a movie about F1, you are capitalizing off the culture of Formula One. You stand to make potentially tens of millions of dollars off of this. Why aren't you throwing yourself into that immersive experience? Why aren't you going up to Martin Brundle on the gridwalk, grabbing the mic and say, let's flip this. I want to know about you and your experience on the grid. There were so many other ways he could have handled that. And instead we're seeing people screaming at Americans right now saying, you guys are trash. You guys are taking all of our races and you're rude to our people. Martin Brundle has more right to be on that track than Brad Pitt. And I think that is where the drama is escalating and it's completely unnecessary.
I also think it's probably, I'm going to say this first. I think it's also like Twitter drama mostly, because most people watching the race couldn't care less. Right. And if you weren't on Twitter and you didn't see all the, you know, people talking about Megan Thee Stallion and her security last year, you probably wouldn't even know about it realistically. If you're not watching the broadcast, right. Yeah. And you're just tuning in for the race, or you are, like I said, you're not looking at Twitter, or you're not engulfed in that world, right, of Twitter, you probably didn't even realize that happened. So I'm just going to say that.
Yeah. But no, agree completely.
Megan Thee Stallion, I'd like to give her a little bit of grace on this one, because it was not her. It was her security. It was, you know, the security guy that looked like the kid from Harry Potter, right? Like he was super rude to Martin. Megan actually seemed like she was kind of like, she would have talked to him.
Yeah.
Begrudgingly or not, she did seem like she would have. But also with that situation, it was like, she probably isn't a fan at all. She's being brought here for whatever reason, and it's fine, right? Like, that's okay. We know that sports do this, right? We know that brands do this. They bring people in, they bring attention to new audiences, and that's fine. Like, you have, being in marketing, like, I understand that. But the Brad Pitt thing, I didn't really hear about it until afterwards, right? Because I was at the race, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was, when I watched it again, like when I saw it after the fact, it didn't seem as bad as what people made it sound like. But if you throw in the caveat where it's like, hey dude, you're making an F1 movie, I would have thought that he would have been a little more interested in like hamming it up on camera and being a little more like, you know, friendly to Martin. At the same time, I think F1 did a good thing by saying, hey, no security. And anyone who thinks that that's a bad idea, or they were like, you know, responding because they think, oh, Martin got his feelings hurt. I don't think so. I think it's more like, hey, you know what? This should be exclusive. There's no reason for you to have bodyguards on here and security. Like,
my thing is,
that's kind of good.
When you look at the cost of the cars, you look at the drivers who are on the track, you look at the actual, all the elements that should, I mean, each car by that standard should have its own security guard. You know what I mean? Each driver should have multiple security guards if we're going to allow security on track. But the fact that you have cars that are that expensive, more expensive than most of these celebrities' homes in a single car, you don't need your security guard on track. You're going to be, that is one of the safest places you can be at that moment.
Right.
So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so little access given there, right? That like, it's just not needed. So I'm okay with that. Totally okay with that. But yeah, like if you are going to be on, and this is tough for me to say because I kind of feel, I'm kind of on the fence on this one because it's like, yes, should you know what's like, should you know a little bit more about F1? Yeah, maybe. But at the same time, like, it's okay if you don't, because these are like, we're trying to, this is where I think F1 has like this mixed, this goes back to what we first, like the first couple things that you were talking about. There's so much mixed messaging, right? Because it's like, yay, we want new fans. Let's attract new fans. But at the same time, we still want to treat everybody like they've been around for 50 years. And it's like, okay, well, there's a little bit mixed messaging there. If you're trying to attract new fans, messaging has to change a little bit. Now, I think Martin Brundle is a staple. And there's a lot of people that say, oh, the gridwalk is stupid and it has no value. And he's like chasing people around. But it's like, well, that's the thing. It is what it is. Like, who cares? It's not, he's not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
And it is kind of interesting, right? Like I love when people stop and talk to him, and it's nice to see that. I didn't think Brad Pitt was all that rude though. Like again, I've only seen it a couple times, and I didn't really, honestly, it didn't really
register. Strike me.
It didn't register as like, oh, he was being super rude. I do feel like that was me, and I'm Brad Pitt, and I'm walking this grid. Like, yeah, I'm gonna stop and talk to this guy because, hey, this is going to go out internationally everywhere. And I'm, oh, by the way, I'm making a movie with, I don't know, one of the greatest drivers of all time as a producer. I'm probably going to stop and say a few words. Even if I would have just promoted the damn movie, you know, like,
right,
whatever.
And that's, I think that's what it was. And I genuinely think that because we've now had two back-to-back events at the US Grand Prix, last year with Megan, this year with Brad Pitt, I think that's why so many of these comments are coming from. And I think they're valid because, you know, again, I think that right now from a European perspective, it seems like the US is taking a lot of their races. And for these races that are intended to compete with Monaco in terms of like the glitterati. And I think that is sort of the underlying issue here. I don't think it necessarily had much to do with Brad Pitt per se or
Stallion
per se. It's that they see this cultural shift happening right now in Formula One. And it's really upsetting a lot of people because it's taking from them. And I understand that. I completely get it.
The one who I thought was more embarrassing as an American was Shaq, where he was like, did you see the clip where he was like, not Shaq doing his whole thing. I think that's fine, whatever. It was, so I think it was like, I don't know if it was Dutch media or somebody asked him about something and he just responded with Lewis Hamilton, like he just kept saying Lewis Hamilton. And it was like,
yeah,
okay. That's stupid. Like,
that's really stupid.
You're not answering the question. You're not sounding like you know what you're talking. And that, I think that's more, to me, that was more embarrassing than anything else.
Right.
But again, I don't, between us and whoever's listening to this, I couldn't care less what celebrities show up, don't show up. you know, celebrities like Patrick Dempsey, who actually own race teams and are, love racing and stuff like that. Tom Cruise, I love, right? Because it's like, they actually have a passion for this stuff. They love speed. And
well, you see them in the garages too. You see them in the garages. They're asking questions. They're looking at stuff. Like they're engaged. Yeah. And I think that is, that shows a difference between, I'm not a capitalist opportunist who just wants to be here and make a bunch of money. This is, I'm here in this exclusive event. I want to learn some things. Yeah. And there's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? That just, like, without social media, if something's shown on the broadcast, you know, 20 years ago, I can't even say 20 years ago now. Social media is 20. That's 30 years ago.
30, something like that.
Who cares? It was like, oh yeah, look, check it out. Brad Pitt's at the event. Like, that's cool. And that would have ended there. It wouldn't have mattered. Nothing else would have mattered. But now, because of social media, you've got people, content creators included, that are like, oh my God, why wasn't he nicer to Martin Brundle? Like, I would have killed to be there. And it's like, yeah, we all would have killed to be there, but
yeah, but we're not,
we don't all have, we're not Brad Pitt. We're not
exactly
whatever. So again, social media needs to like chill the F out, because there's a lot of things where people are like, yo, check yourself, because
well,
you're not, I think it also,
I think it also goes back to, you know, last week, everybody was talking for a moment about Madison Beer, who wore basically underwear, like a hanky panky set on track. And wow, the comments from people. And on one side, you had people saying that it's misogynistic to call her out for wearing underwear on the grid. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it was like, leave her alone. Like, or she's, or that's completely disrespectful. You shouldn't dress like that. There's dress codes for a reason. That's distracting, blah, blah, blah.
Sorry.
I was just saying that it kind of goes to, this is where like that push and pull of F1 is happening right now. And I think it couldn't have been more magnified than in that situation.
Yeah. I you know, it's funny. I was invited to the Cash App Club, which was like the exclusive club that Cash App had thrown. And Madison Beer was there. Serena Williams was there. Bella Poarch was there. Bella Poarch was a TikTok famous. Well, I say famous. She's a TikToker who became famous right from TikTok. And she's got a huge audience now. And she's awesome, right? There was a lot of TikTokers in there and influencers that probably didn't really care about F1 that much. And I don't know. I mean, I didn't really care what they were dressed like. It's not like, so yeah, to see Madison Beer and walk around the, you know, walk on the grid and, you know, fist bump Lewis Hamilton. I mean, again, they've built up celebrity, their own, whatever celebrity is, right? People don't understand that the word celebrity doesn't necessarily have to mean like Hollywood A-list actor. You can have celebrity, right?
That word has changed completely.
Correct. So you can have some sort of celebrity from being a Twitter user, and maybe you have a little bit of celebrity in the F1 tech world, right? Like, doesn't mean you have to be an A-list celebrity. Madison Beer has built up her own celebrity, and she was invited. And I mean, that's how she, I mean, it's not like, first of all, you're inviting her. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure that's how she dresses most of the time, right? Like, when it's not that she all of a sudden like got extra skimpy or something because of, and I could be totally wrong. I know that in certain things where I've seen her, like, I'm pretty sure she was always pretty like,
skimpy.
Yeah, skimpy. And it is what it is. Like, I don't know. As a man, I don't feel like, oh, that's distracting. It is what it is. That's what she does. Yeah. Like, I and I hate to say it this way, but it's like, okay, she's got whatever she's got, and I've seen that a million times, right? Like, it's not distracting because I'm not focused on that. Like, I care more about I care more about the W13 she's sitting on, right? Or whatever it might be, because that's what I'm interested in. And that's, you know, like, that's okay.
Yeah, I think for me, well,
it's tough for people, yeah.
While all this was happening, I'm focusing my attention on them rebuilding Lewis Hamilton's brakes. I'm like, you know what, Madison, I'm like, she looks hot, whatever. Like, she's young, she's hot, let her. I mean, I wouldn't wear that on track personally. But again,
it's not you, like, right?
It's not me. So, and everyone's completely different. So I didn't necessarily have the biggest problem with what she was wearing. I think my whole thing was, yeah, that's also a representation of the U.S. and shit. Like, that was my main response to that. And my other, you know, issue, and I guess you'd be the perfect person to talk to about this. Do you see, because last year Megan Thee Stallion was wearing something very see-through. She was a guest of Cash App, which is also a Red Bull sponsor. Mm-hmm. Is that just, you know, intended to drive the ratings, to drive the marketing? Because everybody was looking at photos of Madison Beer, and you could see Cash App signs everywhere. So it's perfect. It's fantastic exposure for an F1 sponsor.
Yeah. I mean,
it's by design, right?
It's not. Correct. Yes. To answer your question simply, yes. And to think anything less from a sport that's literally one of the greatest, it's probably the best marketing, you know,
all asset. Marketing.
I mean, you look at Ferrari in general, like they F1 is the way they market speed and passion and whatnot. And that's how they've sold, you know, all Ferraris. Of their cars for very expensive, you know, the AMG sales have gone through the roof to the point where Mercedes actually promotes the AMG brand more now than it ever has been. It's probably the AMG is probably the least exclusive it's ever been. Every time you see a Mercedes now, it's an AMG.
Yeah. And anything less is considered like, you're like the poverty Mercedes.
Right. Right.
So sad.
You know, I had an AMG. I recently sold it, but I bought an AMG. Not even because of Formula One, just because of power.
It's,
it's
sexy.
And practice. It was like, but it was like, you're driving, correct. But also it was like driving it around and you're like, okay, well, hey, there's another AMG and there's another AMG. It's not even like exclusive. So to go back to the marketing aspect, yeah, we're literally in a sport where marketing is everything. And so to expect anything less from a brand that, you know, Cash App, they're spending good money to be on the Red Bull car and to be associated with Coda. Yeah, you know what? You bet your bottom dollar they're going to do anything they can to increase mentions about their brand and to make sure people are talking about and seeing Cash App and getting as many impressions as possible. Yeah, of course. So to think that's wrong, well, I mean, it's not your money you're spending. You know, like you spend money, put up the money for a Formula One car or for a Formula One sponsor, and then you can do whatever you want. Because if you, and I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about you, someone that's listening. If you say, oh, I would do it differently. Okay, great. You spend millions of dollars and then not try to
do it differently
to your brand. Then all the power to you. Must be a multi-billionaire. But for anyone who's not, they're probably going to do it like Cash App. And all the power to Cash App again, like, I got invited into their club. It was awesome. It was so well done. It was like a club in there. They also had, you know, there you could see the race. I wasn't in there for the race. I went back to my seats on the start finish. But it was like it was cool. I mean, they had
awesome
great food and drink. And I'm not here to plug Cash App. That's not what I'm doing. But they just did a really good job activating. They just did a really good job activating and making it a spot to be, and especially for people that I don't know if everyone in there was a massive F1 fan, but for the celebrities and influencers they had in there, like, hey, here's a cool reason for me to go to this event and promote it to my fans. That's all Cash App wanted, right?
If Madison Beer showed up in that outfit and Cash App was like, oh hell no. They would have made her change. They would have been like, okay, we need to hire, need to have a stylist come in, like get Neiman Marcus on the phone.
She was fine.
They're like, we don't have a problem with this, but again, they know what they're doing. And so I think that's kind of where people need to remember is that even on track, even during the race, what do you see more than you see the car? You see the logos, you see the advertisement. That is by design.
Yep.
They want you to see that. So I think that's something that F1 fans need to realize, that as a sport is growing, it's becoming more expensive. And so as it becomes more expensive, they need to attract more sponsors. And so this is what's going to continue happening with the sport. And if you don't like it, then I don't really know what to tell people right now, because that's it in a nutshell. That's what's happening right now. And that, you know, while people are this interest in F1 continues to grow, it's going to continue to become more controversial. It's going to continue to be more provocative.
Yeah.
You can implement as many dress code policies. I know that you can't even wear joggers in the paddock or the Champions Club. So the fact that you can wear underwear on a grid walk now,
Again, I mean,
I don't know what to tell people.
Could you and I wear underwear on the grid walk? Probably
no, God,
not.
No.
Can she, because of whatever? Yeah. And again, you accept certain things because certain people have it is, but again, she's there for one reason. And
it's a marketing thing, and they know what they're doing.
The rules are different. The rules are different for different people. Right? Like, if you believe otherwise, then
you're delusional.
Yeah, you're absolutely delusional.
So, going back to kind of the production aspect of Formula One and all this different sort of content, what would you suggest to F1 or Sky Sports for more focused content? I think that when you think about Drive to Survive, you think about the drama. And again, we're very Kardashian world. We want the drama. We live for the drama. I mean, that's not really my cup of tea. But if they had a show that had something that was like, here's the engineering, here's the mechanical, and there's something that was produced by F1 TV or by Sky Sports, I mean, I think that would attract a massive, massive viewership. What do you think, like about that?
Yeah,
you think time?
I think it was time long while ago. I mean, now is definitely the time. Like now, you've gotten so much interest in the sport. I think it's time to give people a deeper understanding. And you know, there's certain people, and I put this poll out numerous times on my Twitter, and I've said this, that Netflix should do this, like have almost a companion show kind of thing, where it's like, cool, produce, you know, Drive to Survive. And then after Drive to Survive, that, you know, the season is up.
Right? Under the hood.
The hype. Do an under the hood type thing where you'd go deeper. I mean, they've got the footage, number one. Number two, it wouldn't take a lot to hire a tech person, you know, a Scarbs or I mean, anybody. Really. There's plenty of, like, awesome women content creators. My friend Molly that I met up with, I actually met up with her at the Bristol GP in Austin. She's a wonderful, you know, phenomenal engineer mind. I mean, she breaks things down super simply for people to understand, like complex ideas about, you know, engineering aspect. Like, and I'm just using that as an example. Like, there's plenty of people they can reach out to and be like, hey, would love to have you do some VO work about, you know, a tech or engineering side of the sport. Like, it would be such low hanging fruit for them. And again, on Netflix isn't about getting all the views, right? It's just getting the right views. That's all Netflix has ever been about. They don't need to, they don't need to have a billion people watch something. They just need to have the right 100,000 people watch something. And so, yeah, I completely agree with you. Sky Sports can do it. F1 can do it. F1 does it a little bit, right? On the F1 TV, they have like their tech, and I think Sky
tech
Sports
talk.
Does the tech talk. You know, so there are certain things, but they can do more of it. There's definitely a large subset of fans that are interested in it, and I think you could get more fans interested in it as well, just because, you know, that curiosity, when you pique your curiosity, like, oh, wow, there's more that goes on to this, like these cars than just driving around the track. Yeah, there is. Look at all this. So yeah,
well,
I think it's definitely time for a complimentary type show.
Yeah. And I think it goes even farther than that. I think people are so curious about the business aspect, the social media aspect, the production aspect. Even right now, as Formula One continues to expand, as the calendar continues to swell with races, I think they've said that they need to cap it at 24. They can't do any more than that, which is good. It's positive news, but it's kind of forcing F1 in a way to kind of reshuffle their talent. And I've seen this uptick, especially this year, of F1 looking towards like apps or, you know, content creation platforms like TikTok to find new presenters. They're giving these people these opportunities to audition through live fire as presenters. And I think that what that's happening, I mean, there's so much curiosity now. Everybody wants to be a presenter. Everybody wants to be a content creator. And I genuinely think that they could really have something there if they just gave everyone, here is the behind the scenes. This is what you can, kind of like an F1 school, and F1 partners and the teams partner with a lot of different universities and things for these educational opportunities. And so I think right now is that perfect time, because they're showing right now that F1 is trying to grow. They're trying to expand, and they're looking towards really unconventional methods to get there. I know that back in my day when I was a football writer, if I found out that ESPN and Fox Sports were reaching out to women on our content creators on TikTok, I would be like, what the hell? This is trash. But now everybody understands that it's all part and parcel. If you want to get on TV, if you want a shot at something, you have to put content out. That's how you're going to get noticed. And I think that that would be a great opportunity for Formula One to sort of open up, just open up the vault and let people know, like, this is what goes on.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. No doubt.
Well, one of my last questions I wanted to, a couple of last questions I wanted to ask you. Do you think that at some point ticket prices going up are going to price fans out of attendance? I think they know that the viewership is going up.
It depends on who you look at. I think this is where I say, like, you know, F1 needs to reel in what they're trying to do, right? If you are trying to market and message this thing to a younger audience, a younger demographic, right? One thing that Bernie Ecclestone never wanted to do was he couldn't have cared less about the younger generation. He famously said, I'd rather have the 70-year-olds that actually have money to spend on this, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now tickets are getting more expensive. And so if you want to reach it into a younger audience, now, of course, there's people that buy tickets, save up lots of money to buy the tickets. There's people that are in better financial situations that can purchase these tickets for their children, whatever. Okay, that's great. But now you're really you're right back in a position where it's like, okay, it's the same exact audience. Nothing changed, right? It's just people with more opportunity. Or people that have more money, whatever, which is kind of what the sport always was anyway. And again, if that's what you're trying to do, then that's what you're trying to do as a business. But if you are trying to go younger, then I do think it becomes a problem. And it's probably a problem faster because we have social media where people can amplify these messages, right? And amplify this, hey, I got, you know, I can't afford these tickets or what, you know. I mean, Miami, I heard a lot of people complain about things, and they, you know, listen, they were expensive. And I think I'm going to talk for the United States right now. You end up having like the Austin GP becomes your affordable race to go to, your Miami race becomes.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of sort of
can afford it.
What Vegas is, I mean, I think it was, I forget which hotel owner or whatever said he was going to buy what, $20 to $22 million or something MGM worth of tickets and package them. And I'm like, yep. That's crazy. Like that's going to be the fan base of the Las Vegas Grand Prix. And I don't know.
You talk to somebody else who's like, well, if you can afford it, then great. You're just complaining.
Good for you.
The thing I think with like Vegas is that you don't have general admission. Right. So this is where I think, yeah, prices are going up and that's fine. But you know what? I'd rather watch a race. A lot of these races, I'd rather watch them from the grandstand, from the general admission anyway. I, you know, grew up going to races, all sorts of races. We always went, you know, it's general admission. You go sit in the lawn, you post up and like you move around, you get your vantage spot. And like, that's the fun of going to a race, right? Mm-hmm. Vegas, I don't know where you would have general admission, to be quite honest.
I have no idea where they would have it. I don't know if you've been to Vegas or how often you or
lot,
how you,
a lot, if you were, a lot of times. I got married.
If you remember. Oh, did you? Okay.
I got married in Cozumel on the 60-something floor. Yeah.
Good for you. That's dope. But that entire circuit around there is, it's very, industrial, residential. Mm-hmm. It's just a very interesting little track. So yeah, to your point, I don't know where they would put general admission. Plus it's at night. It's a night race. So where do you sit? Where do you see the race
Vegas
from?
At 10 o'clock at night? I mean, have you walked around Vegas at midnight? Like I've walked around Vegas midnight, 3 a.m. I've walked around, you know, all times of the day you walk around, I've walked around Vegas and it's like, okay, cool. Am I going to, one of the bridges that goes from like, I don't know, the Cosmopolitan to the whatever's across the street over there. Like, am I going to go to the Walgreens across the street over there, the little mall? Like, am I going to go and stand on that? Like, am I allowed to stand on that? Is Cosmopolitan tech?
Mm-hmm.
Then you wonder,
are all these properties, if they're going to have like porch parties, so to speak, and have their own grandstands?
Of course they are.
Exactly. So it's like, so again, where do you sit if you, mm-hmm. you know, there, that's this, obviously why there's no general admission, because where would you sit? But I don't know. I think from the United States perspective, I do think that CODA is going to continue to be that sort of legacy track, which is, I mean, I'm not complaining at all. But yeah, I am really wondering if they're trying to attract a certain fan base. Like to your point, I think Miami is going to be that pie in the sky race. Vegas is going to be all about corporate sponsorships. But again, I don't see that helping the United States very much when it comes to the vitriol of European fans, because we're taking a race from them to throw that corporate shit show. And it's like, at what point do you remember, like, your audience here? And F1 has an audience.
Yeah, it'll end up being, and, you know, like, I think the way I'm looking at Vegas is it becomes to just satisfy. So a lot of my clients are very large enterprise software companies. Most are in either Orlando, like their corporate big events, Orlando, because Disney, and they have the infrastructure to handle large corporate events. I'm talking 100,000, 150,000 person events. And a lot of executives will take time because, hey, we're in Orlando, I'll take my family, they go to Disney, this and that. Las Vegas, very similar. It becomes like the adult playground. They can call that. And a lot of corporate events are held in hotels around Vegas, again, because they can handle it. So I see that as this, like, it becomes corporate only, but it's going to become kind of like that race where, hey, all the sponsors, I mean, look at the sponsors that are coming. And the reason why I bring up my clients, because a lot of my clients are also happen to be sponsors in form. You know, Oracle is sponsoring Red Bull, $500 million for 5 years, whatever it is. This cross-section of, let's get all of these sponsors coming into this one place that they're already going to anyway, right? And it's like, it just becomes this big, for Formula One, at least, it becomes this big prospecting sales pitch, right? That's what Vegas will be.
Oh, totally.
To say we're going to get priced. So I guess this whole conversation is a long way of saying, yes, they're going to have a problem with ticket pricing. Again, you're going to have to keep general admission. You're going to have to start bringing some other races back into the fold that are more affordable, and other races that are like in places we haven't been in a while, right? Like that would be, I would love to be back in South Africa. Like it'd be really nice for that. Sepang.
I think though, with the West Coast fan base of Formula One, they were looking at Vegas as, oh my gosh, how cool, we're going to get to go to a race. And then obviously, you know, ticket prices came out and they're like, yeah, that's not going to happen. So I think exactly, like, it's very, like, the West Coast is very expensive. So I think that really kind of took the wind out of a lot of people's F1 sales at that moment. And I don't know. I think from the perspective of F1, it's like, it's growing at such a fast pace. They're having those growing pains throughout every aspect of the sport. And I am wondering long-term what they're planning on doing with that, because the sport's only going to grow. And if you have a team and a sport that you love and you can never see them or you can never watch it because you can't get there. I don't know. I don't see those fans sticking around long-term. And I think if long-term growth strategy is the focus here, then they need to think about that.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So because Austin, you think about the traffic getting in and out, it was never a problem when, you know, before this year. This year there was problems, people getting in and out of the track. And I think that they're having to work through those growth, you know, issues right now. It happens everywhere, but it's like, how much Austin is a massive city, as you know. There's plenty of places for people to stay, but there's only so many roads in and out of CODA. It's not exactly like it's right next door downtown Austin. It's a ways away. So even that is going to be that growing pain. But, you know, it's every single race track has to work through things. Look at Monza. They're going to have a lot to sort through. But I think, I don't think that Vegas is exempt from this. But question I have for you, or rather, I have two questions. From a business perspective, what would your dream activation be?
Oh, God, dream activation.
Like, who would you partner with? What would you do? What events would you have? Like,
oh my God, this is a very in-depth question.
I know. But this is up your wheelhouse, and you've seen the data. and so much of this conversation has been about, you know, data and financial growth. So,
man, well, let me start with this. I really loved what IWC did with Gone and Mercedes. That whole like how they blended the whole like speed and Tom Cruise promoting the movie. When I look at partnerships and activations, like I love seeing multiple brands coming together, multiple personalities coming together, and it creates like this oh shit moment, or like it's really cool, right? So I just want to say that because I really did love it. Let's see, for me, you might have to cut out my thinking here and get back. I start talking because now I'm really thinking about this.
This is an on the spot answer.
I know. I'm trying to think of something that would be really, because I've thought of like so many different. I mean, can I say Ferrari? Can I put them in the mix?
Yeah.
Like totally. I would love. So I mean, I would really, if I had to pick one thing, I would. This is not one thing, but this is a this would be an activation for me, I think, for each individual, like each race. And I said this before, there's not enough focus on like where we go racing. So like, because that's another aspect, I think, to Formula One that like, is it's huge, right? Culture, travel, you know,
so the location.
So location location dependent, but right, it's easy to make fun of the United States if you're outside of the US, because there's really no, like, F1 doesn't do anything to sit here and be like, hey, this is the culture around this place where we're going racing this week, right? And they don't do that really anywhere. So I want to see, you know, F1 partner or, you know, activate with, whether it's a personality or a creator, and then partner with, so if you're in Italy, you're going to partner with, you know, Ferrari. And I would love to see focus content. This is a content play, but focus on all the things that make Italy great, right? Same thing with the UK, all the things that make this great. The brands that make it great, the people that make it great, the food, the lifestyle, right? So there's like so much that can be done, and none of this has to be dependent on the teams, right? It's like you really don't have to go and like, you don't need any input from the team. But this is something that I want to see F1 activate on, because, you know, some of the teams do certain things, like you see certain pieces of content, but it's really hokey, right?
Like, yeah.
Let's just take, for example, the US Grand Prix. Well, I don't know if you saw Carlos and Charles wearing like,
oh God,
dollar store cowboy hats.
Make it stop. Ugly ass boots.
Wearing them the wrong way.
Say no more.
But it becomes super cheesy, right?
Yeah. And like,
Michael Buffer doing the, you know, let's start your engines on stuff. That's cool. But like, if people don't really know who Michael Buffer is or the history behind Michael Buffer,
so cool.
It's corny. And so what if F1 said, okay, listen, we're going to travel with like a watch brand that is out of Detroit. They've got like this history, like World War II, all this cool stuff. Like, okay, you take a watch brand, I don't know, like you partner up with them, and you partner up with, you know, classic American brands. I don't know. You pick classic American brands, you know, Coca-Cola. I'm thinking of classic American brands and nothing's coming off the top of my head. This is awesome. Great, Vin. You can't even prove a point right now.
Ralph Lauren, Tommy Hilfiger,
whatever, you get the pick, right? You partner up with different brands, you partner up with personalities in that country, and then you go and like, this is the country, this is where we're racing, this is Texas, this is why Texas, you know, this is, I don't know, since cowboy hats is a huge thing that all of the teams seem that is like how they're going to express their personality for being in the U.S. why don't you go into the history of cowboys and ranchers and like all of that. I mean, I think a lot more people would be like, oh, that's really interesting. So there's a long history of, you know, ranching and farming here. Wow, that's very similar to my country. You know what I mean?
Well, like, and it's interesting you say that, because so many people I know from the UK, they say that's what they love so much about Texas. And people who come for the race say that driving to the track reminds them of driving through through the country in the UK. And so like it's a little nostalgic for home for them. So I think it's interesting that you say that because people actually from the UK have said that.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's like the absolute number one activation I would do, but as a content partnership or a content play, I think that's such low hanging fruit. It's like Anthony Bourdain, kind of like Parts Unknown meets, Jay Leno's Garage meets, Formula One, right? So like it's, and this, in my head, it kind of all comes together like this because of the work I've done with some of my clients where, the biggest thing I like to preach to my clients is focus on your clients. When you create content, focus on your clients. Don't focus on yourself. No, you don't need to tell everybody when you're creating a content series, like you don't need to create content that talks about your software because nobody actually cares, right? They want to know who uses your software and what kind of company are they. It's the same thing kind of with, it is the same thing, Formula One. I don't need to, like, I know that cars go fast. You know, we see that on the race week. Show me why the people around this race matter. Show me who the people are that are enjoying this race. Show me the culture in this area. Help me understand the foods of this area. Like that would be, like, I don't know if I saw this at Coda, but like how cool would it have been if it was like Taste the Americas type thing. Or Taste of America, I get something like that where, you know, there's different foods of the U.S., there's different, like, cultural aspects of the U.S., where, like, you could go and you can, like, almost like an Epcot Center. I guess that's I guess that's basically what I'm going for. Like, if the U.S., if F1 is going to do something in Vegas where it's going to be your, headquarters, and they could do this in the U.K. too, but if you had, like, an experience center that was like Epcot, and it's like, these are all the countries we race, and these are foods from these countries.
That's
and
a
these
good are idea.
So look at this. See, like this is, you got me on the spot and now I'm coming up with an idea.
That
like,
is a really good idea. You should pitch that to them. That's dope.
I mean, that would, like, to me, I think it's so important because it's so easy to, and I'm first generation Italian American, or I'm a first generation Italian. My parents came over from Italy, right? Mm-hmm. And so to me, one thing my family, we never wanted to lose was our heritage, our traditions, our culture. Like, so we still do a lot of things that like my dad did growing up in Italy, right? Like it's, so I'm always leaning on things like that, where it's like, I think that if you're F1 and you really want to, you know, help the new audience and the old audience kind of, you know, understand each other, it's like help these folks truly understand one another, right? If I'm from the UK and I don't understand American culture, vice versa. If I'm a new fan of the US and I don't understand UK culture, Italian culture, Austrian culture, Asian culture, Japanese culture, Chinese culture, whatever. If you don't understand these things, it's easy to be like, well, why are they getting another race? Or why are they getting this treat? Like, it's easy to say that when you don't, because a lot of times we forget that there's people on the other side, right? We forget that it's humans. And so once you realize there's a humanity aspect to it, you're like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Like, hey, these people also deserve to watch a race that they've been, you know, a fan of this sport for so long. Or, hey, they also deserve to enjoy something the way they want to enjoy it. I think that's where F1 is. And I was talking a little bit about, like, you know, my own experience with, you know, family wanting to keep up with traditions and stuff. And it's like, you know, we always want to tie back. We always want to keep our culture relevant and flowing to like the next generations and stuff like that. So F1 has the opportunity to do that, where it's like you can keep your history and your tradition going while introducing it to new fans and also doing something great for people, where it's like connecting them, truly connecting them.
I think what that would also do is promote tourism too, because then you'd be excited by these different countries. You'd be like, oh, that looks really exciting. I really want to go there. And so I think at the end of the day, if Formula One can promote tourism in the countries that that host races, then I think that's a win-win for everyone, because people through, I guess, F1 tourism get to experience different cultures, different parts of the world, different food, and they get to have these once in a lifetime experiences, and they might fall in love with the place. So I think that is probably one of the better ideas I've heard. And I truly think you should pitch that to them, because that's dope. Especially in Las Vegas. Especially in Vegas. That's the perfect place to do it. You're going to have some of the wealthiest people possibly in the world at that race.
Vegas is a perfect spot for it. Number one, yeah. Because like F1 wants to do, you know, they want to have it as like kind of like the epicenter of F1 in the United States, but also because there's so many different, I mean, you have a freaking hotel that looks like the Eiffel Tower. You have the Venetian that's like, it's like Venice. You have New York, you know, like you literally have the, you know, these hotels and casinos that are made to look like different parts of the world. Like it would be so for F1 to do this. Anyone listening to this that works in F1 or that wants to make this happen, like this would be super cool.
Yeah, give you a call for sure.
I think it's very beneficial.
Yeah, for sure. We'll definitely pitch some of the people that you know. That's epic. But
Thank you.
All we've got today. That was a really great conversation, very informative. I think we covered a lot of different, I think, his and hers perspective on different F1 things. And I think, again, we all just have one thing in common. We love the sport. We want to learn about the sport. And there's, I think, a voice for everyone in F1. And as it continues to grow, we've got to grow with it. We have to be better 100%. Stewards of the sport.
That is, you nailed it right there. I mean, that's, if we just said that and ended the podcast, like that would have been perfect. Because
that's how we're ending the podcast. Vincenzo Landino, thank you so much for joining me today. I will be sure to plug your all your socials, but why don't you give them to us right now? How can we find you?
Best place to follow me is over on Twitter, Vincenzo Landino, at Vincenzo Landino. Go there. That's where you're gonna get all the info about where I'm at. And that's where I'm also the most responsive. I pretty much live on that damn bird app. And
I think we all do.
For as long as it's up and running, and I'll be on it. So
awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Bye. And that is the show, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in, and a special thank you to my guest, Vincenzo. If you liked what he had to say or you have any follow-up questions for him, don't hesitate to find him on Twitter at Vincenzo Landino. If you like the VF1 show, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And if you have any questions or want to follow me for any day-to-day banter, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. My handle on both is at TheVFCastro. Talk to y'all soon.